Blog Talk Radio.
Check, one, two.
Welcome to Flavors. Sit down. Have a cup of flavor.
Peace and blessings, and welcome to Flavors Coffee House Online Radio Style. Today I want to open up the phone lines to artists of any genre, any art form. You have something you'd like to share, you've got something to promote, please feel free to call in. The call-in number is 347-857-1189. I've had some great conversations with people that I will call colleagues, an artist that I'm going to be newly working with, and, you know, really, really thought-provoking conversations to lead me to, you know, be interested in opening up a dialogue with anybody that would be willing to call in. I have some thoughts around, you know, what is your bottom line in what you're doing? What is the end result of what you want to get out of what you're doing? I've been asked that pretty frequently lately. You know, what is my bottom line and what is it that I want to get out of what I'm doing through Flavor News and Flavor News Radio. And another thing, you know, I was thinking about is what's good business, practice, and, you know, what's effective communication. I am going to be doing an artist roundtable. I haven't done one in a while, but it is scheduled for the 27th, Thursday the 27th at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I definitely want to discuss these things on that particular show. But I'm open to you know, having a discussion around these topics even today at the coffee house. So if you're interested in joining me in conversation on that, again, call in. Number is 347-857-1189. I'm going to open up today's show with an artist, newest artist that I'm working very closely with. His name is Nomad, and I'm going to play his track, Nuff Said.
What he said, Jesus is coming back.
Some fighting others and kids.
others. Some people choose to become statuesque lovers. Racial profiling, different public housing. Everyday people moving south, moving by the thousands. A nationwide epidemic like at a neighborhood clinic. They're passing laws faster than a New York minute. I'm talking gentrification, having no explanation. They're making moves to incorporate a new plantation. With no time for wasting, hell on earth is what we're facing. Ain't no American dream, so meet the new replacement. With time running out, ain't nothing wrong with even praying. Even for those whose genetic source is rapidly decaying. With no time for delaying, my mic is for moving the crowd. So when I say what I say, I'ma say it real loud. I'm black and I'm proud, busting out onto your head. Forever stand strong in the land of living dead. Enough said.
Nomadic with his piece Nuff Said. Again, Nomad is one of the newest artists that I am going to join his team and work with. And let me just briefly say why. When I first met him, of course, you know, interacting and first impressions are very, very important. And, you know, I was really impressed, you know, with the way he spoke with me. He's very direct, very, very tall man, you know, and, you know, maybe you could find him intimidating, but he's very direct, and, you know, and he wants direct answers, you know, or responses. It's not like he wants a lot of fluff, you know, in a conversation or whatever. It's something very, very different for me. But he's very professional in what he's done, and if you were to see his the album that I have presently, which is an older album, it's done right, you know, from the fact that he notes that he's registered with ASCAP to recognizing who's produced the tracks, the studios that he worked out of, you know, all the people that are involved are acknowledged on the CD under each track. The production level is very, very good. He worked with some good people. He's willing to invest time and money into his project and his art. And I just had, that was my first initial appreciation for him. And there's some good things that he and I are going to do together. So you'll definitely be hearing more about Nomad on Flavor News Radio and beyond. He is working on a video that'll be coming out in 2012. He's also working on a new album. He's in the studio as we speak, working on his new album that will also be released in 2012. So one of the questions, you know, again, that I put out there at the top of the show is, you know, what is your bottom line? You know, what is good business practice and what's effective communication? All of these topics that I just threw out are topics that have been brought to me in conversation in the last week. And it's really made me think. It's really made me think, why am I doing what I'm doing? What is it that I want to get out of this in the end? You know, and, you know, what's my bottom line? And when you think about that, it, in a sense is a little, It's not necessarily easy to define that, and I think it is at the point that it needs to be defined. You know, it's too simple for me to say, hey, I'm Lady Flava, I'm the artist cheerleader, I'm waving leopard pom-poms for you from the Pacific Northwest and all of that, yet that is what I'm doing. But there's so much more to what I do than just waving leopard pom-poms, and this is going in a direction of you know, turning this into a legitimate business, turning this into a moneymaker, being able to have a financial foundation to grow what it is that I do to better serve and support the underground independent artists. So what is my bottom line? Is it just wanting to be supportive, you know, to do these things for all of you, or is it something that I want to be able to make a living and survive off of it? What's my bottom line? So what's your bottom line in what you are doing as an artist or being a part of this industry? Because the majority of the people that come to any of the shows on Flava News Radio have pretty much something to do with the underground independent artist community, even if they are just fans. And I know that there are some amazing people out there that just love to support the independent artists and recognize the talents of the masses out there that are not being recognized the way that they should be. But think about it. What is your bottom line? What is the end result of what you want to get out of what you're doing? Let me scroll down my list and see who else I can bring your way. I really wanted to play some tracks by a group that I went to go see perform last night. I just saw them. Where'd they go? Let me see if I can find them again. You know, even though I deleted a whole bunch of tracks off of the music board here because not all the artists joined the movement, I still have tons of tracks, and it just wants to jump around. So last night I had the opportunity to attend Clientele's album release party. Let me tell you, it was an interesting experience. And I cannot wait to sit down with them. They are going to come on the Leopard Carpet at some point and do a live interview with me. And I'm really kind of interested in the lineup that they chose. Because they went with what I would call a pop singer by the name of CC to open. The middle act was a rock funk band that's The name is something to the effect of like top to bass or tip to bass, kind of a strange name. All of the acts prior to Clientele were just very high energy, but just really diverse. And then you get to Clientele, and Clientele is what I would call a soul funk jazz band, and they're amazing, absolutely amazing. I would say, in my opinion, almost hands down, they're probably the best best live band act that I've experienced in Seattle. A lot of the music is, majority of the music is original music. All of the talents, the musicianship of each member is outstanding, so it's a great experience. But it's like, there are things that I question about what I experienced last night. So I'm not going to get into those details, but let me go ahead and play a piece by Clientele. And I'm going to play, you know what, they played this last night, so I'm going to play their piece, Red Kool-Aid. with their track called Red Kool-Aid, and I had the opportunity to see them perform that particular piece live last night at the Hard Rock Cafe for their album release party. So if you missed it, it was a great event. A very, very diverse group of people that attended, diverse groups that performed. Very, very interesting experience in going to a show for me. So, again, you know, maybe later on I'll talk a little bit more in depth about, you know, what I felt about the whole experience altogether, but it was a pleasure to actually see this particular group play live. And there's a gentleman by the name of Walter Finch, who I have known of since about 2003, was introduced to his music by his brother, and finally had the opportunity to meet him in person last night. Can I tell you, an absolutely, absolutely amazing guitar player. I knew him as a bass guitar player, but last night he played lead guitar, and just phenomenal, and just an amazing personality, you know, just warm and gracious, and it was just a pleasure to actually, you know, just be able to be in his presence. So again, that was Clientele that I just played with their track called Red Kool-Aid. So I'm going to click on the line. He didn't raise his hand, but I'm going to assume that he called in and is ready to talk. All right, TC, you ready to talk to me?
Absolutely, all the time, every time.
All right, so how are you, my friend?
I'm well, and you sound well as also.
You know, I'm trying my best. Yeah, I'm trying my best, TC. I'm glad you think I sound good. That's all good then. So what's going on with you and Morning Thieves and all the projects you've got going on?
Morning Thief. Oh. Thank you for asking. It's getting pretty intense. I'm at a point in the story where I've taken the gang on the road, and believe it or not, for the original story, I think I'm like 4 or 6 episodes away from being done with the original story.
Really?
Yeah. It's been a year. I slated it for 44 weeks.
Okay.
And I'm right on track.
Wow.
I'm right on track. And, you know, my actor, Elijah Hassan Mouid, is doing exceptionally well. Keeps getting better and better and better every week. And I mean, that's hard to say. It's hard to say that someone keeps getting better. But if you go back and listen to the early chapters and the early episodes, you can hear kind of the question marks in his voice about why am I reading this. But from 16 forward, he's been solid and increasingly better every time. I mean, there are a few points of greatness before 16, but kind of like at 16, he made it his. He owns it.
Okay.
I can't imagine anyone else telling the story.
Okay. Well, no, I have to agree with you. I think that Elijah has an absolutely amazing voice and has a great delivery. I mean, you know, we know him as a spoken word artist up here in the Pacific Northwest, 60 to the Messenger. And as a spoken word artist, he has great presence and great delivery. You know, so I knew that when you chose him to participate in this particular project that he would do great. So, and I guess I could see what you're saying, and what I really need to do is go back and just start from the beginning again and just listen to it, you know, chapter after chapter, and just, you know, experience it that way, you know, because I'll go in and I'll listen to a chapter here and there and, you know, and all of this. So, TC, you know what, before we go any further, will you explain to people what Morning Thief is?
Morning Thief is an unusual podcast. Well, first off, it's a podcast. And I'm finding out more people need a definition of what a podcast is. A podcast is very simply an audio file or audio take on someone's position, opinion, idea, concept. I took it an additional step further with Morning Thief, a podcast novel. Pardon me. And turned it into a format to self-publish, where most folks are self-publishing and banging heads on the wall while no one's buying my book. I did it as a weekly serial or serialized story so that you can come to the story when you have the time. The cost to the consumer is zero. The listening pleasure is up to you. You can listen one chapter, 10 chapters, or you can start at the beginning and have the whole experience, and shortly you're going to be at the conclusion, so you'll be able to go back and listen to it all the way through and understand how the story really develops. So Morning Thief is a book I wrote. I turned it into an audio podcast. I serialized it, and I put it out to the public. At the end of Morning Thief, I'm going to keep my website up, and I'm going to take works from other short stories from other writers and put the right actor to them and have them begin to read those stories, because as a writer, the hardest thing to do is get published. The best thing you can do is email me. And my email address is...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
My email address is very, very simple. thinkingcaveman@gmail.com. And I will write you back, and we can talk about what we can do for your story.
So also give the web address to go to the podcast, TC.
Long web address, easy to find. podcast.thinkingcaveman.org. Or you can just go to Google and search Thinking Caveman podcast. It'll come up.
Okay. For those of you who have never experienced this, I think it's definitely worth, you know, checking out. And not only because it's a great story that TC has written, but just to be able to experience a book in audio form. Now, of course, there are a lot of audio books that you can get out there. And honestly, I love audio books because sometimes I don't have the patience to sit down and read anymore, but I'd love to hear it. And if you've got a great voice to deliver the story, it makes that book really, really come alive. So if... in my opinion, and I will say this is my opinion, in the way that this has all come together between TC and Elijah, it makes the story come alive. And it's easy. You can listen to it, as TC said, as one chapter at a time. You can, you know, listen to a few, you know, but it's something you can listen to in your leisure. And I believe that with the storyline along with the voice, it will draw you back. It will definitely draw you back. And I think it's something that authors should really, really consider, you know, exploring how to bring their book to life. One of the things that I'm really interested in here at Flava News Radio is receiving some audio excerpts of books from authors, you know, as promo tools to help sell the book. I think it's a great way to promo a book out there, even if it is in written form, and of course not going in the direction of audio form, but I think it's a great way of just giving somebody a different way of experience the potential and pique their interest to purchase your book. So if you are an author out there, I would open up the door for you to contact me and see how you can go about getting an audio excerpt promo put on Flava News Radio. So, but so TC, you know, I had started out the show by asking, you know, what is your bottom line in what you're doing? So can I ask you, what's your bottom line in what you're doing with Morning Thief?
Sure. That's one of the reasons I called you today. I wanted to talk about the monetization of a hobby. You know, turning a hobby from being a hobby into a small moneymaker or whatever is always a task within itself. My goal is and has been, I want to be a repository for young writers, new writers. And when I say young writers, I'm not talking in age. I'm talking in exposure to the writing scene. There's so many writers who keep journals, short stories, but they keep them to themselves. No one knows when they get better. No one knows that they exist. I want to be that repository and that online publisher in the audio format for them. I do have a focus. I want to be interested in stories about African Americans, stories written by African Americans, and stories for African Americans, written to a largely black audience. I want that exposure because it is often said that our entertainment is limited. We're either laughing at each other or talking about what crimes we've done. That's not really true. And then the sad third one is we always cry to God about the way things don't work for us. There's so much more to black writers than those three subject matters. And I want to find those writers and be that place for them. About the monetization of my website, once I get to a point where I can take off my writer director hat, then I can put on my businessman's hat and start chasing that dog down because he's got a head start on me. But I run real fast in that department. And I got a few plans about how to monetize without passing that cost along to the listeners or the writers.
So when you say not pass that on to the writers, why would you make a decision like that?
Because in most cases where writers are so, join this contest, pay this fee, they generally turn out to either be undefined offers, scams, or situations where you've signed away your work and for a fee and you didn't even know it, a fee that you paid. You paid somebody to steal your work. No sane person would do that. So I will never ask a writer for money to have the story presented. When a writer gives me their story, they retain the rights to it completely.
I
don't want to pass that along to a cost along to a writer. It's just not cool.
To me, it is cool, though, and I'll tell you why. It's an investment in what they're doing. that
part of it, yeah.
Because you are providing a service to sell their story.
I understand that.
And so, you know, because you're not a scam. You're bringing life to their book. To me, it's a service, you know, and, you know, as, you know, for instance, you know, like working with Elijah as he grows and he masters what he's doing and you bring other people in to create voices for the book, it's a service that's being provided. And so in my mind, I think that is something that warrants to have a fee put onto it because then, at, you know, you can also say that, you know, if you enjoyed the story and want to read it or whatever, you can go to Amazon.com and purchase the book or whatever, you know, so on and so forth, if that's the direction that particular writer's going. Now, if they're just a novice and they just want a story out there, that's something different. But if they've created a book that they're trying to sell, and this is just another way of marketing their book, I think it does warrant a charge.
In that aspect of, or in that scheme of defining how their story gets told, I do agree. There will never be another Morning Thief. Let me give that a lot of explanation. For one, if someone came to me 6 months from now with a story with a similar tone, mm-hmm. to the violence level, the anger toward women, the anger toward authority that is presented in Morning Thief, mm-hmm. without a complete end up front, I would instantly reject them. I wrote Morning Thief. I know what it's about. I know how it ends. I know the moral of the story. It will be revealed in the story. But if someone came to me with that, not a chance. And not because I don't believe in the format of the writing, I've already done that. I don't want to retrace those steps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the long form story, it will take me about 44, 45 weeks to have told the complete story of Morning Thief. I won't, as a publisher, be doing another long form storytelling for another writer. If I did do it for another writer, we would have to sit and discuss, you know, remuneration. There would be some payment involved to get that done because there's audio editing. I'm doing directing of the actor. I have to cure the actors. I have to get the voice right. There's a level of editing to the script that goes into it to make it sound seamless the way that it does. There's a lot of work that goes into putting this together.
Right.
Now, for a short story, you know, in a short story, and most writers are about 5,000 words or less, hey, we can talk, you know, you're who I'm looking for. You know, anywhere between a page of words is 500 words. So if I'm talking 5,000 words, we're talking 10 pages. So that's kind of the max that I'm going to do. And also for the listener, I want to be able to give them a complete story inside of a commute. So if you take my podcast with you and you put it in the car and you're driving along, you get to your destination, I want you to make sure that you're at the end of the chapter and it's all wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I go to the short story format, I need to wrap you up inside of 20 minutes or less. If we can't do your whole story within 20 minutes or less, I'm going to send it back to you and we're going to be talking about ways to shorten it if I like your story, or we're going to be talking about ways of how we can't do it.
Okay. So you're basically, you're looking for somebody who's not really interested in having a book out there.
Well, I'll take excerpts from their book.
Sale.
I'll take excerpts from their book. No problem. Mm-hmm. It's like someone that I would like to get, and I'm going to say it out loud, is I'd like to get Barbara. I would like to get some excerpts from her books. I've read a couple of chapters. I like kind of what I'm reading, but I want to put them into context and see how they sound coming from an actor.
Right.
And see if that's something I want to do. And there are a couple of other people who I really got high on my list that I want their stuff, but I'm not going to chase them down either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to beg somebody to say, let me do this for you. Let me show you how this works to your advantage. And when I say Barbara, I'm talking about Barbara Grosvenor. Let me say it right. Barbara Grosvenor. Just the way her whole name together is hard to come off my lips. And you know, there's
Barbara,
a couple other folks.
By the way, she's a writer of a book. The first book that I read by her and reviewed is called Even Numbers. And the second book is We Belong Together. But I believe she changed the name of the book. She put something out the other day that she had changed the name of the book. But she's an amazing writer. And she's somebody that I have known for many, many years. And not only have an appreciation for her style of writing and the diversity and capabilities of her writing style, but she's a great person on top of all of that. So that's who TC is speaking on, Barbara Grosvenor. So.
And it's like I also have Valjean Jeffries. Now, with Valjean, she writes a very unique form of horror story. Very unique. Very, very, very African-American. Very passionate. But they're horror stories. And they're really good. And I have a piece of hers that I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I get to the end of Morning Thief, Valjean Jeffries' piece is going to be the first one that I put out. And I'm going to do a couple of things to it to make it, to give it that thinking caveman feel, because I think it's a good story. I've read it. I've had it for 6 months sitting in my drawer, and I'm waiting to pull it out because I want the public to enjoy it. I want her to be proud that she's allowed me to share it with the audience, and yeah. I want to use it as an advertisement for what we can do for your product.
Mm-hmm.
And her books have been out 2-3 years.
Okay.
So, you know, she's already marketed her book. She's done everything for it. I'm not adding to her marketing. I'm just adding a different component.
Okay.
The new word is called transmedia. That's the new catchword. Let me describe transmedia for the rest of us. It is when you have a written product, but you don't have a video or audio component to it, and you produce that 2 to 10 minute commercial for your written novel or your manuscript, and it is a standalone piece over here in the video market, like you're on a Vimeo or YouTube, and then you add a slight audio component to it, which may be a music score or, you know, music inspired by, and then you have your written piece. For Morning Thief, if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, I started doing a little small transmedia thing where I put up pictures of what the next chapter or the coming chapters will be about, and I started that at chapters 16 and 17, and it's starting to flow as the story goes. I keep adding photographs to it, so that you, the reader, or the listener, in this case, you have a reference point of where the story is at. What are the images that go with this chapter? In the past, I have been kind of against it because the transmedia idea takes the written word and tells the reader what to see, or the listener, what this is what you should see in your mind's eye. I'm older. I was always brought up with the purpose of reading and listening is to make your imagination work, not
right.
for it to be fed what it should be seen. So I got a little bit of a personal Catholic school etiquette issue with transmedia, but it works. It works when you put the right visual out there, and you have to make sure it's the correct visual you want the consumer to see for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So my transmedia pieces in the photographs on Facebook, you can catch me at, of course, Facebook, TC-ThinkingCaveman, and you can look at the photographs for Morning Thief Told in Pictures, and I just give you little bitty mental nudges in the right direction. I don't make it obvious or blatant. It's like, for example, my core characters have never been seen. I leave them totally up to your imagination. I don't describe them. I don't give you any features about them. I just make it point blank. My character's name is Little Man. Figure it out. My character's name is Carl. Figure it out. There's a pimp named Black Charlie. You can figure that one out with no help.
So do you find that the visual twist to what you're doing now is effective?
Yeah, it is. When I first did it for Chapter 17, I simply put a photograph of a dumpster up. And the caption to the photo says, "Look in the dumpster." That's all the caption says. And when you're listening, to the Chapter 17 and you're going through the story, because I have the lady in red reading the first prologue to that story, and her last two sentences just explains the dumpster completely. And then we go back to my actor Elijah continuing the rest of the chapter. It's a it's an impactful way. I got so many listeners and views directly from that. In fact, for that single chapter, in the first I did about 10 days. In the first 10 days, I got 532 new views for that. So
that's
does
cool.
Transmedia work? Absolutely, it does.
Okay.
You know, I grew my audience off of that one.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and that's
like
why
for
I
me,
stuck
I
with
think
it.
That right. I think that there are different ways of touching people, and with the beauty of the internet and being online, it just opens up so many more capabilities of being able to put yourself out there and how to draw somebody in. And I do think that visuals are something that are very attractive to cause somebody to pay attention. I know that, you know, like Stephen Jerome Ferguson, who I am working closely with at SJF Music, you know, he has the capability of creating some just very attractive YouTubes for some of the artists that he's working with. And when you look at it, although it's not the individual artist, but the pictures that go along with the pieces, whether it be a spoken word piece or whether it be a musical piece, you know, it just kind of helps create a scene. I do think that, you know, art has that capability of doing itself, and if it's done right, your own imagination should be able to take you there. But I do agree with you that there is something about, you know, just kind of putting something out there to help enhance, you know, what the experience might be like. I think that when it comes to the books or stories like what you're working on, I think putting a voice to a story is an amazing thing because it just, you know, brings the words to life. And so I think I love what it is that you're doing. And
thank
I hope
you.
That people will definitely come on board because, again, for me right now, at this point in my life, I prefer an audio story, you know, because I can just chill, close my eyes, and listen. Where, you know, back in the day I was a book reviewer, I could read, you know, a couple books in a week and do that. The way that I, you know, am right now, I can't sit and read a book. And I'm learning it's not necessarily that the book's not good. It's just that my attention level doesn't allow me to just settle in a quiet and be able to, you know, delve into a book. So I think that what you're doing is great. And then, again, I hope that people, you know, just really pay attention and go check it out and experience it. And then if they are a writer and have a good story, to definitely, you know, make contact with you.
And I thank you very much. And I appreciate your accolades for my story. But I want to come back around to what we were talking about in the ultimate goal and also monetizing our hobbies. Mm-hmm. My ultimate goal overall, above everything else, I want to be a repository for other writers. I want to help them grow, period. If it stops there, it stops there. I'm a happy guy. Monetizing this concept, there are sources to make it happen. for you. And when I say for you, I mean the writer in general and everyone else. If I have my way, I will have the correct advertisement group attached to podcast.thinkingcaveman.org that will be able to assist writers in being heard, seen, and published, and to help them grow. And also, for those writers who don't quite understand that you need to write in English for an English audience, writing slang is difficult. You cannot take out your Android phone and type a manuscript and call it good with that poor spelling. There are certain ways that writing needs to fit into this square in order to be published. And, you know, I'll have some sources that will help them explore that as advertisers as well.
Now, when you say, okay, because you know that statement right there can be questionable.
Go ahead.
So when you talk about good language and you talk about slang and you talk about getting published, the bottom line, you're saying what? Because you can get published with slang, and there are actual publishers out there that will publish you. It's easy to write a book. You can self-publish. You can go to Ex Libris or whoever.
Yes, you can.
You can go to Amazon. You can go to Lulu.
Every rap song ever written is written in Ebonics.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand what you mean when you say you can write poorly and get published. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I want someone who understands that a sentence needs a few things, like a subject, verb agreement. It needs these things to be a sentence and be able to be read back and sound intelligible. And you have to realize that as a writer in the World Wide Web, other English listening people are hearing what we're reading out. So they have to be able to distinguish what it means. Not what does it mean in Cincinnati, but what does it mean on the streets of London? What does it mean in Laos? What does it mean in Johannesburg? It needs to be something that the World Wide Web of English speakers can understand. So
basically, what you're saying is, if you want to reach a broader readership or fan base or consumer, this is what you need to do. If you are okay with being limited to a small group of readers, then you can choose to go that direction.
Keep on doing what you're doing. That was a very flip answer of me. Yes, that is correct. You need to modify yourself just a little bit to be more effective.
Well, I do wonder, though, TC. You know, I do, and I've asked this, and I believe, you know, we've had this conversation on Artist Roundtable and other shows that, you know, how far do you want your art to be able to reach? Are you doing it for a specific group of people, or are you creating it for the masses? And if you're creating it for the masses and all people of, you know, different ethnic groups, different age groups, economic, a variety and diverse group of people, then are you sure what you're creating is something that can be appreciated, you know, by the masses? And so I'm not sure if, you know, artists really think that through. You know, who is their target audience for this? And do they really know how to market it so that it does reach outside, you know, their immediate circle of people? I think you need to get creative. I think you do need to define. I've had some people challenge me on that and say, you know, my art is not defined by any certain group of people. and so I'm not going to, you know, put it in a category or whatever. Okay, that's okay. But if you're an artist, and this is only my opinion, if you're an artist that wants to market your craft and your art out there, I think you do need to know who's going to be your potential consumer and know how to effectively market yourself amongst them. It's just like artists on Facebook, for instance, marketing amongst artists. How effective is that? To me, that's not effective at all, because we already know that artists are generally not going to, first of all, repost your post, because you're their competitor, and they're not going to financially support what you're doing. So, I've asked it a few times, you know, how effective is that? It's just like the groups that are being created on Facebook by artists, and they're asking artists to join the groups. How effective is that?
Oddly enough for me, I wish I did have competition. In the type of podcast I'm doing, I wish that I could connect with more people that have the same level of passion for urban writers, African-American writers, that I do, because that group needs and wants to be heard more. Finding yourself in an audience of two or three is cool because, okay, the three of you understand each other, but there's not enough audience to go around. For example, I mean, the only other person in all of podcastdom that I've found that's doing something similar to what I'm doing is an educator named Seth Hardwood. And he is so diverse from me that we kind of met online through a third source. Mm-hmm. And the third source explained it to both of us honestly. Well, podcasting, for the most part, is a bunch of white geeks sitting around talking about science fiction. It's hard to get a bigger audience for what you guys are doing, but the two of you need to get together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Seth has given me a few pointers that have helped out really well. I've written a critique, or not a critique, but a review of his book to be placed on Amazon next month at the beginning of November for his release. And he's retooling his website. He's going to include promos for my podcast on his show. So I wish I had that camaraderie. And oddly enough, I'm a black guy doing this, and the only person I can run into that's doing it is a white guy. I wish I could get some of the brothers in Atlanta who have great cinematography skills who are putting out web movies to bring me into their circle. I want them. I want to be in their circle. They, like me, are a little fearful of, are you trying to do what I'm doing, or, you know, are you going to be my competition? Well, for one, no, I'm not. And if I am, I think you would want me. Because if you're better than I am, flash your light over here and show your audience why they should keep listening to you. If I'm as good as you are, you should get praise. I will.
But I think that in something like what you're doing, that at this point, not necessarily doing it for money, but doing it for the art, and just, you know.
Excuse me.
What do you call it?
I'm not doing it. It seems like that's what I'm doing it for, but trust me, I'm doing it for others. And I will bring a monetization scale to my business and take it from being a hobby to being something more. But when I take it to that point, I want people to understand that I can do 100 other things. This is where I want to be. It's kind of like you. Mm-hmm. You're doing what you want to do, and you're starting to grow it into a business. And once it becomes a business, it's still going to be what you want it to do.
Exactly.
Or what you want to do. And I know that. And we've talked about this for what now? Almost 2 years?
Right.
And I know you've been at it longer, just like I have.
Right. But I think it's, I think like TC in a sense, you know, we've put the time in, you know what I mean? We've paid our dues in some ways. That,
and overnight success is anything but overnight.
No, and that's not going to necessarily happen. And you're right. I mean, as far as especially what I've been doing, I have gotten to the point of being able to receive recognition from those doing it in a bigger way than what I'm doing, or those that are doing their part on a bigger scale to reach out to me and respect, you know, what it is that I'm doing. So that that part's, you know, does allow me the opportunity to then put a price tag on, you know, working with certain artists. And, you know, and I'm very blessed to, you know, have, like, for instance, Nomad to work with, you know, as a client. But it's just interesting to me, like, so going back to what I was saying to you in regards to what you're doing, because it's not such a popular art form, I think that there will be those that are doing the same as you in a sense that will come check you out just to see, and there will be that competitiveness in a sense of that. They may not openly let you know, but they, as, you know, as the word gets out, you know, about TC Thinking Caveman, they may come check you out to see, and then, you know, see how they can go back and one-up you on something, you know. But I think it's so ineffective to join groups online that's just artists and promote that way.
I do understand that portion. Speaking to the choir in an empty church is exactly that. You already have the faithful.
Because we know how time-consuming it can be to be online promoting. And when you are promoting against your peers, you are not going to get them to pay for your CD or your book. You know, you are not going to get them to repost for you. You know, so you need to somehow get creative and find the fans. And, you know, that is what I'm so interested in, and maybe that will be a topic for an artist roundtable too. Like, why do you create these groups, and why do you invite, you know, artists to your groups, and then within the group, you're promoting your product?
Well, hold on to just a moment. Let's talk about social media,
mm-hmm.
or the big change in the social media. Instead of
mm-hmm.
trying to pretend that we're not talking about Facebook, let's be very direct.
Okay. Hey, Facebook.
And the reason I want to put it there that we're talking about Facebook, because there's NING, Ning, there's Mingle City, and there's several others. But specifically, Facebook made a change trying to separate itself from becoming a MySpace. And in effect, they did exactly what they didn't want to do. You know, I'm a deep guy, so I looked at a couple of angles here. The nice people over at Google broke out their social networking portion of their website. And they already had built into it individual groups that you can place people into. So, for example, I post one posting in a Google Plus website, and it'll hit my friends, my writers, my actors, and whoever else I check off on the list.
Mm-hmm.
When Facebook introduced it, meaning to be a specific thing, they made these choices for you initially, and now you have to go in and undo them all in order for everyone to see you. When you take the 8 million people that are on Facebook and try to do that, it turns into a confusion fight. So instead of Facebook bringing us all together, they segregated us without understanding what they were doing. They did it for convenience. They did it so that you can show your friends that you hang out at the bar with what you want them to see, while shielding it from your mother and your boss.
Right.
And Facebook did that for you automatically based upon the relationships you had already set into place. So they backed themselves into a corner. That's why older users of Facebook, and when I say older, I mean 27 and older,
right,
are having a little bit of an issue adapting to the change.
Well,
and that's why
so
more and more people, that's why more and more people that I personally know in my personal life are moving to Google Plus. I've been at Google for nearly, working with their products for nearly a decade. So I'm very familiar with how the changes come.
And you know, and I've got a Google page too, which I never use. And I'll be honest with you, I hate Google email, Gmail. I hate Gmail. I keep saying.
And see,
Google.
I love it.
I hate Gmail because I just don't think, in my opinion, it's not user friendly for me. And you know, I don't use Yahoo anymore because my Yahoo has gotten, attacked or whatever, and then when that Box B thing came out and I clicked on that because somebody sent it to me, then it just really screwed up all my email accounts, and so I don't use any of my Yahoo accounts anymore. But I liked Yahoo over Gmail, so now I just use my business account. But you know, I loved my Ning page when I had Ning. I thought it was a great way for somebody like myself to promote out what was going with the artist because it was very easy to do that directly from the site. I didn't necessarily expect it to be somewhere that the artist would promote amongst each other because it was pretty much all artists. What I did want, which was pretty good, they would open up conversations with each other to discuss concerns or you know, things like that, share topics, but not necessarily their art. But when it came to the art itself, it was Lady Flava, the artist cheerleader, that was putting them out. But unfortunately, you know, Ning went to the paid thing, and then I understand when it went turned into a paid site, it became something a little bit more difficult to work with as an administrator. But going back to then, Facebook, I honestly have heard more people saying that they're going back to MySpace.
Yep.
And I could definitely see the draw to MySpace just because it can you can create something that looks similar to a website off of MySpace to, you know, to be able to promote yourself and your art off of there where you can create the backgrounds and put the music and the video and all of that. But with all the changes that are happening to Facebook and people creating the groups, and then automatically you get put into the group without being asked to be put into the group, I think that's annoying because then you get all the notifications that's going on in a group. You have to be able to and willing to take the time to go and remove yourself from that group. And then, again, I think it's so ineffective to promote yourself amongst your peers. You need to, I think there's, and how you would go about finding the fans, I think that's the challenge, is how to go find the fans of the art, because it's easy to find the artist.
Well, for me, it's October now, but for the last 3 weeks, I've been doing live visits. For example, attended a science writers convention. And I don't mean science fiction. I mean hard science. Like the big topic of the evening was microbiology and how infectious diseases carry. Well, I'm in a room of 125 people. I make 6 contacts out of 125 people, myself being number 7. And since then, I've gotten an email from 4 of those people. I've gotten comments about Morning Thief from another 2. So out of the 6 contacts I've made, I've had 100% contact with beyond the event. It's time to go back to going live. I got 2 writers' conferences lined up in the next 3 weeks. I'm going person to person now. I'm going personal. I'm getting online and personal. And you know, I'll bring those people to my online presence.
And I think that you're right. I think that is a necessary approach, is to make yourself visible and to, you know, be in situations where you can connect with people one-on-one to then be able to open up dialogue around what you do. For instance, when I went to Clientele's open album release party last night, I stood next to the mom of one of the band members of the rock band. She was so proud. Oh, my goodness. You know, she was like one of the proudest moms, you know, on this earth about what her son's doing. And but just standing next to her, she saw that I was writing notes and stuff like that. She asked who I was and what, you know, what I was doing. And so I introduced myself, you know, and I always have business cards on me. So I was able to give a business card, you know. So, you know, this was somebody who's never heard of a Lady Flava or Flava News or Flava News Radio or whatever. And I'm sure her ideal thing would be, you know, for me to check out her son and be willing to play her son's music on the radio or whatever. And honestly, you know, for a rock band, I thought the musicianship was outstanding. I thought their stage presence was outstanding. But I think when you go into situations like that and you are somebody who has something to sell or you want people to pay attention to, I think that one-on-one contact is going to be extremely important, because it's when somebody experiences you in person and there is something kind of new and exciting that you can talk about, that can pique an interest of somebody who maybe have never experienced online radio or, you know, really paid attention to independent artists, or never paid attention to what a podcast might be or a, you know, one that's about a book, you know. So I think that that's a great way of actually creating a fan base, a real fan base, to then turn it into a potential consumer, you know, or follower. But man, the stuff of promoting amongst your peers, I think that is just, man, a waste of time.
Well, I tend to agree with you, simply because your peers are either going to gush about you or they're going to dish about you. You're rolling the dice either way. Be happy to affect one new person. Just one. If you can get one person outside of your circle to embrace and like what you do without a lot of salesmanship, you're on your way. And I'm very surprised that in a hard science room, I mean, these folks, they write for science journals, they write for the University of Washington, they write for magazines that are in most doctors' back offices. And that's what they do for a living. But they're like everyone else. They need to be entertained.
Sure,
and,
exactly.
You know, and they were sharing little writer tips with each other. We were standing there sharing writing tips with each other and how to affect new audiences. And that was very relieving for me to know that just because I write to an urban audience, I don't find myself the only person that's having problem getting readership for whatever it is I do. Finding people to come to podcast.thinkingcaveman.org is work. And sometimes it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. I'm pretty sure you've had the same. But your marketing tools are very effective for what you do, and I like them. But I'm already on the inside. I want to know what the feelings of someone who's listened to you for the first time or that has never listened to you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what their reactions are. I want to feel that. I want to see that spin on the ball.
Right. And, you know, and sometimes I wish some of the new listeners would actually call in, because I do get some great emails periodically. You know, for a while I was getting quite a bit, you know, from Europe and like Japan and Africa and stuff like that, you know, kind of letting me know what they thought of the music or my shows or things like that. So, you know, of course, when you go to the statistics, you can see that, you know, maybe somebody from a new country has come, you know, or, you know, a new state, or, you know, how long somebody stayed on, you know, and paid attention or whatever, things like that. But there's nothing better to get an actual feedback and somebody letting you know what their experience was. And You know, so I guess right now the only thing I can really, really speak on is it's radio show hosts that are reaching out to me and radio show hosts that have never, that I have no idea who they are, you know, until they actually reached out to me.
And same for me. I'm getting up other podcasters who are on other subject matter. I got a guy who has a jazz podcast out of Australia. I was glad to get him because he added a different component of understanding to me about what he's hearing. And he doesn't understand the mean streets of Chicago. Like, you know, I don't understand the mean streets of Sydney, Australia. But, you know, there's this component about Morning Thief as a story that once you get it and once you start listening, if you listen to two or more episodes, you get it and you want to find out what happens. I got a personal phone call from a friend yesterday. I sent out a promo a few days ago, but I emailed it, and it's a 2 megabyte file, less than 2 minutes, and I mailed it to a group of people I know, and I told them, give me your feedback on this. And I got a phone call yesterday that I wasn't anticipating that was just fabulous. You know, the person on the phone is telling me how they like the character and hate him at the same time, how they understand him but are confused by him at the same time, and they're waiting to see what happens. They're there every week, like religion, waiting to see, what am I going to do to this guy next? And they're liking that component, whereas their spouse or their mate is like, I don't want to listen. I want it all at once. Well, I really can't accommodate that.
Right.
But for everyone else, hang in there. It's getting where it's going. And I want you to listen, and I want you to hear it, and I want you to feel what's going on in this story, because I don't care what you're doing today for a living or in your life. You either know, have seen, have heard, or have dealt with someone like the person in this story 100% of the way. Their circumstances and situation may have been different, but you know this person. And it's really well. Sorry, my passion's coming out now.
I think that that's when there's good writing, and as you talked about Elijah, that's when there's good acting and presentation of the characters to draw the people in. And I think, you know, when you can get somebody to hate your character and draw them back every week, I think that's such a good thing. It's so funny when somebody says, oh, my God, I just hated that or whatever, you know. But obviously you paid attention and you got it, and it caused you to react. And so, you know, that's the blessing in all of that. So I want to ask you another question to go in a different direction of what you're doing.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, one thing we didn't talk about is the fact that you are introducing music into your podcast, and you have used John D. Green Sr. as one of the musicians to provide music for your podcast.
Yes, I'm listening for the question.
So, but I just wanted you to talk about, you know, why you have made the decision to go in the direction, and at what point do you use music, and then, you know, maybe just your experience working with John.
That is an important question, and thank you for asking. In every African-American life, nah, I can't say that. Every black person's life, there is a soundtrack. May it be made by the Isley Brothers every summer for your youth, Earth, Wind, and Fire every fall for your youth, or just every day in your life. For black people as a whole, music has a basis and a place in my life and their lives. And I wanted to bring that component into the story. But by me not purchasing the music, I had to find it through other sources. And I went to the independent artist market, and I asked 15, 20 people to contribute music. Every last one of them said yes. Only one of them took the time to send me the music. And that was John D. Green Sr. And he sent me a limited catalog of his music that I could use, and only certain portions of it fit in certain places. So when I want to give an emotion or feeling to a scene, instead of me playing it underneath, which I can do, underneath the actor's voice, I give it its own window. Sometimes 10, 20 seconds up to a minute, minute and a half. In fact, I got a nice Latin jazz piece that I'm going to be posting tomorrow night for chapter 23 and 24 that I made space for it in the podcast just to be there. And okay. I want that thought of music to always be running with you, because I also put together a mainstream compilation of music, and I put that out as a single episode. Well, later in November, at the end, I want to be able to put together several independent artists, talking to young folks now. Young folks, I sound old. Sounding to some folks down in California right now. And I've approached them several times. Give me your music. Give me your music. I want to use it. I want to use it. I want to use it. They want me to just rip it straight offline and use it. I want them to send it to me so they can get the accolades that go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Miss Flo's and Karma Latte Band, which has been my introduction and outro songs for the entire thing. It's a poem called Humanity, put to music by Porchante. She did a great job with it. And it kind of segues right into my story. So it is the theme song for Morning Thief. I have her permission. We've talked about that. Other elements of music that I'm using here and there, I'm finding through Creative Commons license sources. But if there are any artists who are listening and you want your music to be played inside of my podcast, come on. I need you. You know, it's thinkingcaveman@gmail.com. If you're not sure if you want your music to be part of it, listen to an episode that has music in them. All of them do. You know, go to podcast.thinkingcaveman.org and listen and think about how your music would sound in place of that. That's why I did it, because I also want to put out compilation episodes where I put together at least 10 to 18 songs so that you can take those in your car, and while you're driving, you're thinking about Morning Thief. While you're driving, you're listening to an artist you normally wouldn't hear. That's why I did it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know. John was thrilled, you know, to be a part of your project, and his wife Donna and stuff. And so, you know, it's something I definitely wanted you to talk about. You know, why and how and all of that, because you are, you know, incorporating the independent artists into the podcast, and I think it just is another creative way for them to get their sound heard, you know, on a podcast. You know, I think that's the other thing is that people need to really get creative. You know, how can they, you know, they be heard? You know, who can they connect with? You know, you never know. I mean, you could connect with the weather station.
True.
I want to say it's Patrick Yandel that has a library out there. I forgot what it's called, so I need to either ask him or whatever, that music is purchased to be used like on the Weather Channel and news stations and things like that. I mean, there's so many different ways to have your music heard on top of, you know, getting on the internet. And it's just like here in Seattle, what our city of Seattle phone numbers, some of them have local independent artist music playing on their whole button, you know. So
if you're listening and you really want to laugh about somebody getting paid for something, there is 2 seconds of sound in every episode of Law and Order. A musician had to record and write that. It is 2 seconds
right.
long. And it's been euphemistically called the doink doink sound.
Right.
That is what it is listed as, doink doink.
All right.
Somebody in Hollywood got a check for that. And they went to the bank, and they've been going to the bank for the last 23 years and cashing that check. And they will probably, their grandkids will be cashing that check. Yeah, it'll be down to about 6 cents. Per check, but do you know how many times Law and Order is on in a single day of any given week?
Right.
I actually counted it on different channels in different places. Law and Order is on TV in the United States of America a minimum of 8 to 12 times a day.
Right. Oh, I'm a Law and Order, you know, fan, so I watch the marathon, so I know.
No, but I mean different episodes on different channels throughout the United States is 8 to 12 times minimum a day.
Right.
And if you're collecting a check, $1.79 an episode, we'll call it $2 an episode, you made coffee money for the week off of one day of work. Now, I know that in the big Hollywood scheme of things, coffee money means nothing. But you sitting in your living room playing with your keyboard, hoping to get a record deal. Imagine if someone paid you $2 a day to do what you do. How would you feel?
Right.
Kind of cheap, but kind of cool. I play 2 seconds of music. I get $2 a day. Okay.
Right.
How could you not? And you start in places like this. You start in podcasts. You start in commercials. You work your way up. Mm-hmm. You get your catalog in the public. That's exactly what I'm doing with Eliza. Yeah, I mean, when you look back at it and realize, if you listen to chapter 1, 2, and 3, and listen to chapter 21, 22, and 23, you're gonna hear the difference, and you're going to hear the growth of an actor. I'm not going to tell you that I found Elijah. We found each other. I've known him for years. He's known me for years. This combination of working together has helped him to grow. Hopefully, it's helped him to grow as an actor in the way that he speaks. I see it. I hear it. I know he realizes it. For me, it's helped me communicate as a director, as a producer, and it helped me to understand what an actor is going through when I'm speaking at him. Because I've been in situations where I've had to talk to actors before, and I couldn't determine what that sound in their voice was or the look on their face was, or if they were trying to tell me, yeah, I'll do what you're saying, but I really wish you'd shut up. I couldn't determine that. Thanks to working with Elijah and the fact that we're direct, blunt, and honest with each other, I've learned, you know, this is a person with feelings. They're not doing this because they feel good about it all the time. They're doing it because it's the job. It's the acting. It's the craft. It's building up on a foundation. And I want him to be able to take part of Morning Thief in the future and add it to his repertoire of works as an example to someone else of how he's grown or what he's capable of doing. Because I think we're at a point where it's not about him growing. It's about him exhibiting what he's capable of.
Sure. I have to agree with you on that. I think that Elijah has a great voice to do voiceovers, you know, and things like that. I mean, he really could do a lot more, and he's definitely one of those creative souls out there that, you know, I would love to have the capability, you know, and basically it comes down to right now financial capability to help, you know, help him do a little bit more with it, because I think that he's extremely talented, extremely creative, and, you know, he's definitely worth, in my opinion, you know, to be experienced. So,
Late next summer, I'm going to be shooting a short for a piece that I wrote, and I'm shooting it for entry into film festivals, and I'm shooting a short, and I really want him to be in it. I mean, you know, it's a little early for me to be talking about it, but I really want him to be in it because I got something carved out nice and neat for him, and he can do it.
Right.
And it's not because he's my buddy, but it's because he's extremely capable. You know, another local person that's extremely capable, but I just can't seem to attract him to my projects, Kevin Gardner. I really like just a little bit from Kevin Gardner.
I don't know Kevin.
You don't know Kevin Gardner? Oh, he is a vocal coach, and he's done a lot of people locally that we both know. But he's a really good vocal coach. I remember when I first met Kevin Gardner, like in 93, 94, his voice was a little untrained, but he's spent the last, wow, it has almost been 20 years, but he's spent all that time in between of really honing his instrument, his voice, whereas he has a great rhythm, great pattern, and he can flow in and out of characters. I know he can. He usually sings. I don't think anyone has given him an opportunity to act. And so I don't think he has a passion for it. But
okay.
Him, we can talk. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be my buddy.
So you mentioned something, TC, that I don't know if people are aware of. Well, first of all, TC and I go way back. I want to say 2006. Is that about right?
That's about right. That's about right.
So 2006, and I met him through Ms. Flo's Porchante that he was speaking about, an amazing local spoken word artist, and she does a lot of things in our community. And so I met him through her. So TC, you know, used to come to my coffee shop, and he's an interesting man, as you can tell if you've been listening to this particular show. He's an interesting man. Highly intelligent, very creative, and, you know, he clearly is a talker, you know.
Sorry.
But he knows. That's all right. Actually, I've enjoyed the conversation. Something different to do on the show. But TC is really involved in the film community. And I think that's something that people don't know and realize about you. So why don't you talk about that just right quick?
And thank you very much. And also from this conversation alone, you can kind of understand why I need an actor for my podcast, because my voice goes up and down. I've been around the local cinematic crowd for about a decade now. Don't mean to keep saying but it's apropos here. I've been around
them
for a while.
Can I ding you? Can I ding
you?
Yes,
you can.
Okay.
Yes, you can ding me. I know
later.
I know what you're talking about. I've been around the crowd for about a decade, and I found myself in an unusual position. I found myself becoming more and more knowledgeable about film, audio, lighting, editing of video footage. And along with a guy named Warren Etheridge, who is at the Warren Report, is a friend of mine, and we've done a few interview shows together. He does a show called The High Bar. You can find it at thehighbar.tv, and you'll see whom we interview. We interview a lot of top-end Hollywood folks. One of my favorite interviews so far has been the writer-director Tom Shadyac. To everybody listening, that name doesn't ring a bell to you. But when you realize that Tom Shadyac is a writer and director, and he is the reason that Jim Carrey is funny to you. And we got to interview him. So we interview a lot of people who are behind the scenes. Tom Shadyac is the writer and director of the original Ace Ventura movie, Liar Liar. He's done several movies with Jim Carrey.
Right.
Yeah. He does several movies with Jim Carrey, but he does the movies with Jim Carrey that he's the funniest in. Because if you watched Ace Ventura Pet Detective, you were sitting there going, why am I watching this? But when you realize that it was actually funny. When you watch a mature Jim Carrey in the movie Liar Liar, you're watching it and you're going, funny. And that guy, I got to tell you, that guy, that interview, and it's, we've done two interviews that are absolutely my favorite. Tom Shadyac, because he's such an interesting person. And he has such an interesting view on funny life, real life, and serious life. It puts everyone to shame. And Conrad Anker, he's a mountain climber who's climbed Mount Everest several times. best two interviews we've done, but we've interviewed close to 100 people now. And in fact, I wasn't on set this weekend because I had other obligations, but I think our next time on set is the 13th. Yeah, next Thursday, the 13th. I'm not even sure who we're doing for the 13th, but yeah. And then, you know, there's several movie projects which I'm involved in, and one that, you know, is close to my heart is I was involved with the Kool Out Network for, we've been involved for like 21 years. I've been in the production staff of Kool Out Network for 21 years. It's hard for me to think of that. But yeah, the director of Kool Out.
I think you need to explain what Kool Out is.
Kool Out Network back in the 1990s in Seattle was the show that you would run to the club to be on. And after you were at the club next week on Thursday, you would make sure you were in front of a TV somewhere to see if you made the cut. It wasn't Soul Train, but it was the local show put on by a gentleman named Giorgio Brown, who is Mr. Kool Out. And it was just this phenomenon that has captured hip-hop in the Pacific Northwest, specifically the Seattle area, from the early 90s through today. And currently, Giorgio is working on a big production that is really near and dear to my heart. And I really want to see that come out. I wanted to see it have wide release, and I wanted to see it do really, really well. So that's kind of my background in the local film business. I've done other things, too, but that's what I've done locally. I worked on Shades of Grey with the Grateful Dead. I would say that would be my biggest production of all. And just stuff I've done. I'm really modest about my video stuff because I'm actually a writer.
Right.
You know.
Well, I just wanted you to talk about that because I think that's you know, when I talk about the fact of, you know, just trying to connect with different people when it comes to, you know, this art thing and how somebody's art might be able to fit in somewhere else and make it work. I mean, you just never know. TC could drop, you know, a Stephen Jerome Ferguson track somewhere, you know, say, you know, Warren, what would you think about this going into a film? Or, you know, it's just like I'm in regular communication with a filmmaker out of California named Parker. And, you know, I constantly am in his ear about the fact you need music, I got artists, you know, and stuff. Or,
the same here.
You know, I know different visual artists that may fit in somewhere. It's like, you know, today talking to Nomad, he was talking about how he wanted his you know, album cover to be, you know, and I have a connection that he may honestly work with to get that done. You know, so it's just always keeping your ear to the street and figuring out where somebody's art could fit into where, you know, that's outside of that norm, because sometimes I think that's what's going to, you know, to make it work. So, you know, if you ever want your music to potentially be heard on TV, on the news, on, you know, in a movie, whatever, you know, those are things that, you know, you definitely could explore and get creative around. So
I continually tell people and it never triggers in their head what I'm talking about until after I've said it to them. Every movie you've ever watched, every office scene, every home scene, every bathroom scene, there is something hanging on the wall. It didn't get picked
right.
Accidentally. It did right. Not get picked accidentally.
Right. It's just like when I used to do flowers, you know, back in the day, I'd always notice, you know, the flower arrangements and soap operas and, you know, on TV, and I'm like, I wonder what florist, you know, did that or, you know, whatever. But, I mean, you're right. You know, strategically things are used when it comes to films and television, you know, that – you know, potentially could be your art, you know, that's out there. And there's ways of connecting with the people to be able to get, you know, get your foot in the door with those things. So just briefly, TC,
yes,
another topic that I want to talk about is effective communication. And I think that maybe you could talk about that also, because I think that, you know, I was having a conversation with an artist, and I was having the same conversation with somebody else, and it was like, why did somebody get me and why did somebody else not get me? And I took it back to the fact that it was based on how I was raised. Because when then I had the same conversation with my dad got it. He said exactly the things that I felt when I explained to him the scenario. But the other people that I had talked to about this thing, they didn't get. You know, it was like we were not on the same page. So I'm like, when there's so many ways of thinking, and when it comes to working with creative souls, and, you know, we have this, I don't know, it sometimes it's like there's a block there, and like you don't, you're not getting through. You know, so what does effective communication really look like?
Oftentimes, we have to break it down to the simplest point. This isn't belittling someone or thinking that someone is less intelligent than you are. This is finding what is called a common denominator, where when you get finished speaking, they say, yes, I understand, and are able to repeat it back to you and they're saying in similar words and get the same message. So often, I find people, when they talk to me, are intimidated or confused. When I have this conversation with a third person, they go, I get it. I hear the words you're saying. I understand what you're saying. The English language and speaking to other people is an art form. You just got to find the right rhythm and the right pattern for it. I don't know what to tell you.
Do you think that it's based off of, you know, how you were raised or where you were raised, as how you know how you can, I never thought this before until just recently, how there's this wonderful book called Dictionary. And you open up the book and you read it and you read the definition of what a word means, right? I am learning that people read those definitions and interpret them different.
Yes, they do.
And it's the same definition, right? It's like in black and white, and you're like, okay, is that really how you took that the definition of that word? So, for instance, the word integrity. I think integrity is thrown out there in so many ways to, in a sense, in a power and control manner versus what the word really means. You know, I have integrity, and that's just how I maneuver through life, you know? And, you know, in a sense, it's like, okay, you don't have integrity, you know, so that's why you and I are having issues.
Hang on for a moment.
I'm full of it. Okay.
Hang on for a moment. Let's go off the pace for a minute. Integrity is a combination of morals, ethics, and principles. So when someone uses the contraction, integrity, are they saying they possess all three of those things? Or do they selectively drop one occasionally when they feel like it?
Right, exactly. You know, but that's my thing. So how, when I'm realizing, as I work with amazing creative souls, that we're not necessarily on the same page when we use the same terms, like, how do you effectively communicate, you know, like, you know, because that's going to come down to how people perceive you, to, you know, how you are able to market, you know, and all of that. What does effective communication really look like so people pay attention to what it is that you're saying and doing?
One of the things that you have to do in your public persona is you have to eliminate a portion of the private side of your life. Meaning, just because you, let's call it out. We know that some of the artists that we deal with can't pay their rent. They ain't got no food in their refrigerator, but they're doing their art. The reason you don't know about that from them is because that's not their art. You know, you don't know that they had to get on the bus and go two different counties to come sing at this event and ain't got a way home. Because when they hit that stage and open their mouths, that's their art and they're expressing themselves. That is integrity to your art.
Sure.
And I respect those folks.
Sure, I do too.
The bluffers. There's a group of people I mentally think of them as the bluffers. They appear to have everything they need, but yet they want something from you that they should be able to get on their own if they have everything they need. I call them the bluffers because they're bluffing. They're the crowd that are still trying to fake it until they make it. And everybody's poor today. So don't try to con me that you ain't got what you need and you need something from me. Either fall on the cross and tell me where we stand and let's do this, or leave me alone and let me go do my thing and you go do your thing. There's a lot of cats out there who are faking it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to come up to a very rude awakening from those people who have integrity and who are doing what they're supposed to do. And that's a true fact.
Right. Well,
like
there's
a word that defines it all. And it's called free. Free is a interesting word to look at, and it is a great example word for anything. If you've got to go to work, don't like your job, and your art is where you are free, you're working on gaining your freedom. If you broke and ain't got no money, and you're able to do your art and still pay your bills, you are free. If you ain't got no art, and you got a job, and you can't see a way out, you are not free. It's very, very simple. So
I know.
You talk about people who don't understand the definition of words. Start with the simplest words first, and then begin to build the idea within them. That might take you 10 to 15 years. You ain't got that kind of time, because you need to be running your own business.
It's funny because, you know, I've been having, you know, some really challenging conversations lately, which I'm really glad to have had the opportunity to have, because it helps me think through, you know, what it is that I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And somebody said to me today, matter of fact, are you okay with being a humanitarian?
That's a cute one.
In helping artists. Is that your goal? Because if that's your goal and that's your bottom line, why you do what you do, then that's all good. If that's your bottom line, is to be a humanitarian to artists. You know, so it was like, okay, that's kind of an interesting way of putting it, you know. And so it just, you know, and I love these type of conversations because then that gives me something to talk about on the shows or, you know, find out. Because, you know, as I think about why I do what I do and how I do what I do, what is my bottom line and what's my end result? You know, because I'm quick to say, you know what, I'm 51 years old. I don't have too much time to invest in this, that, and the other, right? And so I'm like, okay, well, then what is my bottom line and what I'm doing if I don't have too much time to invest, you know? So
people will also use your goodness in an attempt to belittle you and beat you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to be careful about those people as well.
Sure,
but
sure.
In your case, hey, let me be direct with you. Have you been a humanitarian? Sure you have. Have you been a cheerleader? Sure you have. But you're going in a direction that no one else is going. This is why other people can't see it. And it's okay. When you get where you're going, you're either going to inspire and encourage someone else. You're going to meet your level of success that is happiness for you. It's one or the other. And in most often cases, if you do it right, it's both.
Mm-hmm.
I want to inspire others. I want others to be successful.
Right.
I want someone to one day be sitting far into the future and go, I really wouldn't have did this unless I heard Thinking Caveman talking about it. I wouldn't have became a writer unless I got that positive feedback.
Right.
And you got to realize, not enough of that is being said to those who are behind us. Not enough of that is being said to the youth. One thing I need to learn, if you made a penny and you spend a penny, you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you made two, save two, you got two pennies. You're on your way. I'm on my way. I got two pennies.
Right.
I'm doing good.
Well, and I believe in myself. And I believe that what I'm doing, and I believe that, you know, what the things that are happening and the people that are being put in my path, you know, are all in my path for a reason, because they are people that are doing things on a larger scale, than some of the people that I have, you know, been dealing with, which is okay, you know, but I love these type of conversations from people because it makes me think why I do what I do. And I think that's something that's really important for all of us to reevaluate from time to time. Why are we doing what we do? What is our bottom line? What is the end result that we want to get? Is it just because we want to help artists? Do we want to make money from it? Okay, if we want to make money from it, what are we doing to position ourselves to make money from this? And just different things. And I think those type of challenging conversations we need to have with each other, because otherwise if we don't, you know, visit that and revisit it from time to time, I think we can be very ineffective in what we're doing. And
yes, we can.
And in the same conversation that I have with a dear friend today, you know, he says, you know, it's easy to get caught up in being online all the time. And but how effective are you in what you're doing? Because if you're not effective in what you're doing online, you're wasting time. And so he said, how do you define the success of what it is that you're doing? How do you know that it's working? You know, and I went into all this like, well, you know, the statistics say this is who's coming, you know, and so I started going that direction, but I loved that conversation.
Yeah, when you look at your heuristics and start looking at who's listening to your show, where are they listening, how are they listening, yeah, those
right.
are facts and numbers, but I also understand the deeper question that was implied there.
Right.
And
right.
That's kind of messing with your head, because if I had to base my first 12 episodes upon continue or not to continue, I would have canceled me. If I was
mm-hmm.
a TV show, I'd be off the air. Looking at the whole piece of work now and looking back over my shoulder, there's no way I would have stopped, or ever should have thought of that. I mean,
right.
it's just like, I'm good.
Right.
I'll share. My existing fear right now about my podcast, it's not is or will someone continue to listen or not continue to listen. My fear is, can I be effective enough to attract enough writers
right.
to become that machine I want to be? My podcast is patterned after a guy in Atlanta named Steve Ely. He does strictly science fiction. And so he had a pool of writers that he could dive into very easily. And you can endlessly pull out science fiction writings. There's an organization designed just for that. They have awards every year called the Hugo Awards. They're right there. You can plug into them. For me to go to an African-American writing group and say, let me have your work and let me put it up, is a little bit more difficult because there isn't a central group to go to.
Uh-huh.
I gotta go, you know, Cincinnati, Chicago, L.A. You know, I got a nice little listening audience in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Uh-huh.
I have two writers in that group. These folks working in the accounting office. But I got a nice little core group of like 20 people, 20, 25 people who listen to the Morning Thief. When I get to the end of Morning Thief, I'm going to make them an offer to, you know, the two writers in the group to send me something.
Mm-hmm.
And in response for them, I'm going to pay them for their efforts. And, you know, extend that to my American audience as well. But I have to bring people to me first before I can begin to do that.
Right. Well, you know what, TC, before we go any further, let me just play your little promo that I have of yours so people can kind of get
my
a taste of
my little promo.
It is. It's very little. I really wished you had done it longer, but, you know, that's okay. We'll work on that.
What time stamp do you have?
Well, you know, I think there just should be much more to it, but it does give people a taste. So with that said, TC, I'm going to play
your
promo.
Let me say it first.
Okay.
This is from Morning Thief, a podcast novel, which can be found at podcast.thinkingcaveman.org. Welcome to Morning Thief, a podcast novel. I am Elijah Hassan Muid, a.k.a. Six Deep the Messenger, your voice for Morning Thief. The slots back on. You gotta feed the pig. Look, man, they done killed one of their own over this shit. They won't hesitate to do it to you and me. They're not like they used to be. They not content to just take what's given. They're getting greedy. They ain't gonna stop. Black Charlie could talk nonstop if you bothered to listen. There was always a trinket of knowledge in everything he said. The warning from Black Charlie was simple. The information about slapping the pig was a known fact. They would take until there was no more, then move on to greener pastures.
That just gives you a taste of how Elijah sounds. You definitely need to go over to podcast.thinkingcaveman.org and really check out the whole series. You know, it's by chapters. What chapter are you up to now, TC?
I'm getting ready to drop 23 and 24 tomorrow.
Okay. So, you know, I would even encourage you to go all the way back to 1. And listen from there. And as TC says, you know, Elijah has grown in, you know, how he performs the words and all of that. But it's just really a wonderful way to experience a book. And it does, I believe, this is just my opinion, I believe it will draw you into wanting to come back and listen to each chapter till the finish. It's something that's just kind of soothing and relaxing, you know, to also experience with a nice cup of coffee. And, you know, TC would love your feedback. So there's definitely places on the website, on the podcast website, where you can leave some feedback, you know, and give some feedback to Elijah, too, you know, and let him know. You can find them both on Facebook. TC is Thinking Caveman on Facebook, and Elijah Muid. Is it M-U-I-E-D?
Yep, Elijah Muid. Okay. And in fact, I just sent you for future use. I sent you the new jazz promo that in your email at Flavor News. So you got that too.
Okay. I will definitely go pull that up and stuff, you know, because it is something that I definitely want to support. and help get out. And I really love the conversation with you today, TC, and the biggest reason why I love it is because I know a lot of times the listeners of Flava News Radio think that I'm just about the musical talents and the audio talents. And, you know, the bottom line is I came in and was birthed as Lady Flava as a book reviewer. So my first passion is literature. And then it grew into, you know, the open mics and selling product at my store and, you know, and all of that. You know, I had a nice little book section of self-published authors from all over the United States that I sold at my shop and, you know, graphics and jewelry and all of that. And so that's how I was actually birthed, was from being supportive to the community, the arts community. And so I don't ever want to discourage any other art form from feeling like they can't be supported by Flava News, because you can. If you are an author, if you are a chef, if you are a sculptor. I have a great, great glass blower that I'm connected to and would love to have. He's called into the show before, and I would love to have him, you know, on as a feature, because I call him an urban glass blower. It's just awesome what it is that he's creating. You know, too, I've had, you know, painters on the show that have talked about their art, you know, and all of that. So I want all art forms to know, you know, this can be your home to be supported. I want artists to come call in when I have the coffee shop. This is when I definitely open up the phone lines for you to call in and talk about yourself and promote yourself and what you're doing. I would love some, you know, some promos for authors and poets and other artists, you know, to be able to play on the show to help you. You know, so get at me at radio@flavanews.com to, you know, see how we can explore how I can support you in doing that. Flava News Radio is a members-only radio station. And so what does that mean? There is a small fee to pay to become a member. It's just $1 per month, which can be paid online or by mail. You can contact me in regards to that. If you are a new artist coming my direction, you need to send your tracks and artist bio to me for review. Yeah, there are other artists that have joined as members, and there are some fans that have joined the movement. So it's not just about audio tapes or audio pieces that can become a part of the movement. If you feel that you love what it is that I'm doing here through Flava News and Flava News Radio, and you feel that this is a forum that you want to be supported by, this is the place to be. I will be moving on and including not just only Flava News Radio. I have been picked up by Soul City Radio in Baltimore, Maryland, Reading's Radio in London, UK, and I have joined the team of KLSL, Liquid Soul. I just was speaking to Rick Tillman, who is the owner of that particular station, and the capabilities are growing. The sister station for hip-hop for KLSL is called Fat Jams 93.11. So even though I will not be hosting the show over there at Fat Jams, I have, you know, the in to get hip-hop over to that particular station.